Radio.
Are We Dating Yet? A talk by Simon Carrington, given at the Restore Weekend in Hobart, Tasmania.
Can't believe it's the last session. It's pretty sad, isn't it? Just talking to Sam about it. It's a good feeling. I mean, it's exciting. We're going to finish up, but it's very sad as well. So we've loved being here, and I hope we're going to finish on a pretty fun topic. We're going to talk about relationships. How to date, what does dating mean, all this stuff, okay? Just to get a quick idea, it's always good to know the audience. No one here is married, are they? Is anyone engaged? Yep, me and you, yep, that's great. Is anyone in a committed relationship now? Kind of, okay. Awesome. Okay, so the rest of us are single. Well, we're somewhere in the grey area, I'm going to call it. So we're going to talk about that now. Awesome. Okay, so we'll start with a quick prayer and then we'll jump into it. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Come, Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit, come. Come, Holy Spirit, and fill the hearts of your faithful and enkindle in them the fire of your love. Send forth your Spirit, O Lord, and they shall be created. And you shall renew the face of the earth. St. John Paul the Great, pray for us. Our Lady of the Rosary, pray for us. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Okay, so to start off with, I want to share, basically, this topic is a real passion of mine. Kind of growing up, I was always thinking about what is the most honourable way to date someone, or how do you kind of get from, you know, from saying like, you know, from meeting someone, saying, hi, how are you, and having a chat to I do on the altar, you know? It's such a long period and so much can go right and go wrong. What's the best way to kind of, you know, work through that journey? And what really got me to the point where I wanted to write this talk was that I got a text message one morning from a girlfriend of mine before I had even met Maddie. She said to me, this guy just came over to my house. My parents and no one else was home. We just did all this, you know, we hooked up on the lounge and went way too far, and he's just left and I feel horrible because we aren't even dating. We're not even in a relationship. Like, we're just kind of friends, and we've never actually like defined what we are or who we are or even how we kind of see each other. But like, I've just gone way too far, and I've given this guy way more than he really, I think, that he deserves. And so this really led me on a bit of a journey to identify, well, confusion is everywhere when it comes to dating and relationships. And I think the confusion is actually the key thing in a dating relationship that will bring about pain or will bring about peace. We've got to know what the other person is thinking. We've got to know what their intentions are. And this is the one theme that I want to talk about for the next hour. In order for our dating relationships to bring about peace, we need to clearly communicate our intentions so that our actions have meaning. Really important point. Because if I clearly communicate my intentions, then every action I do that follows from my clearly communicated intentions, that breeds a spirit of peace and understanding in the person that I'm in a relationship with. Why? Because when I perform an action, or if an action is done to me that I receive, okay, I'm not confused about what that action means or what language that action spoke, because he or she has already explained how they feel about me or what their intentions are for the relationship. Yeah? So that's the whole theme. That's what we've got to understand, especially the guys in the room. Guys, there's only a few of us, right? Guys, we need to get better at clearly communicating our intentions for the young women that we're pursuing in relationships. Can I get an amen from the girls there?
Amen.
Yep, awesome. Okay, Moana, that was a strong one. Okay, so I want to run through about seven points that I think are going to free us up from the pain and confusion of relationships that we are unsure about where the other person stands, so that we can really have peaceful relationships where we understand what the other person's thinking.
The first point, and I'm sorry to start here when we're going to talk about dating, but the first point is, and I really do think this lays a very healthy foundation for relationships, and that is we must be able to enjoy the season of singleness. If you wish away your singleness, if you can't wait to get out of being single and jump into a relationship for the sake of being in a relationship, you are not ready to be in a relationship. We have been given, okay, honestly, our singleness is one of the greatest gifts that God has given us. In our singleness, it is the one time in our life, if we're called to marriage, right? The single period of our life is the one chance we have to discover who we are. It is a beautiful time of self-discovery. Because in a relationship, what is it that you hope to give to your spouse one day in marriage? You hope to give yourself as a gift. And you need to know who you are in order to adequately give yourself away to someone in love. If you don't know who you are, what your vocation is, or what God wants from you, if you don't know your interests, if you don't know your weaknesses, your strengths, your hopes, your fears, your dreams, if you don't know those things, you cannot give yourself away totally to someone in love. And I think this is like the mortal sin of dating. This is the greatest error when it comes to dating, is that we think we're not good enough if we're alone. We're inadequate if we're single. We're looking for another half. No, 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 that's not how God does maths. Marriage is 1 + 1 = 1, right? It's a full person gives themselves to another full person and they become one flesh. Okay, for all of us in the room that are single, right, me included in the sense that I'm unmarried, okay, I'm not half a person, you know, waiting to be completed by my true love. That's not how love works. But too many of us, I think, walk around as a single person saying, I'm inadequate, I'm not enough, I need to find someone that will love me, because if I'm worth another human being's love, that gives me value. That gives me worth. And until I'm worthy of another human being's love, I'm not adequate. I'm not full. I'm not complete. This is important, right? Because if we don't fully know ourselves, if we're not comfortable being single, what ends up happening is we let other people determine our value. And we think that I'm only as lovable as the girl that I'm interested in thinks that I'm lovable. Or I'm only as lovable as that guy that I'm attracted to thinks I'm lovable. If he thinks I'm attractive, I gain my worth from him. Or if she thinks I'm impressive, I gain my worth from her. Because what ends up happening is, if I'm insecure in my own identity, and there's this girl, you know, and she's super athletic, she's musical, she's artistic, she's so popular, it's like, okay, well, then I want to win her love. So what am I going to do if I'm an insecure man? Who does she need me to be before I become lovable? And how can I mold who I am into being the ideal man that she would find to be lovable and attractive? Because when I become that man, then I'm worth something. And then what happens? Say I do get into that relationship with that girl and I've lied about myself to an extent, right? I've pretended I'm, you know, more into music and more artistic and more into sport than I really am. And 6 months down the track, she realizes that she's dating a lie and she breaks up with me. What happens to my worth? Totally lost. Because the whole time I was looking for worth in another person. And so when another person says, well, you're not lovable to me anymore, because I placed all my hopes and dreams into that relationship, it's gone to zero again and I've lost everything. I feel like I'm nothing again. And then again, I'm out looking again. Who can I find that will give me worth and value and identity again? There was a young couple, they started dating in year 9. And they had a 6-year relationship and they broke up when they were 21. And I spoke with them both individually. You know what both of them said to me? They didn't know that I'd caught up with both of them. They both told me, I have no idea who I am anymore. Isn't that an interesting thing to say after 6 years of being in a relationship? I have no idea who I am anymore. They both dropped out of their respective uni degrees and they were totally lost. They had no idea what they wanted, who they were, or anything like that. Why? Because they had both totally placed their identity in the other person. And so they were trying to be who the other person wanted them to be their whole life, rather than becoming themselves and asking, God, who do you want me to be? What is my vocation? Who are you calling me to be? It becomes, I don't know, who does she or he need me to be? And I'm going to spend all my time and energy into becoming that person. So that, I really think, is the greatest error when it comes to dating. So we've got to be comfortable in our own skin. For those of you that heard yesterday morning's talk and Friday night's talk, we've got to pursue a relationship with God. He is the only lover that loves us just as we are, as Maddie said before, right? But loves us too much to leave us there, but he loves us just as we are, and he wants an intimate relationship with us. And we gain our worth and our value and our identity from him. Now, when I met Madeline properly, we really sat down and had a good discussion together. We were both 22 years old. Now, thankfully, we had spent the vast majority of our teen years and our early 20s purely being devoted to God. Who do you want me to be? She was in America doing missionary work, right? And she'd vowed to be single for a year anyway, right? But she had focused all her attention on serving, you know, her relationship with God. And I was trying my best to do the same. So when we met, when we started talking, you've got two people that have spent several years totally devoted to the question, Lord, who are you calling me to be? So by the time we met each other, we were so comfortable in our own skin, we were comfortable in our worth and our identity and our mission in life, and I did not have to compromise any of who I was to be attractive to her. And she didn't have to compromise anything of who she was to be attractive to me. And that's really why I feel our relationship really did slip into place so beautifully. Because there were no masks. We weren't wearing any masks. I wasn't faking it. She wasn't faking anything. It was, look, this is who I am. And she was saying, this is exactly who I am. And I was in love with exactly who she was. Why? Because what did she say? What is a saint? It's the full flowering of the human person. It's, you know, all of us will be saints when you become exactly who God intended you to be. And when I met Madeline, I really felt that from her. She was comfortable in her worth and her identity, okay, as a daughter of God. She knew her mission in life, and it just seemed to fit like a glove. Also, in our singleness, it's the one time we've got to really set our boundaries in the area of purity and chastity. When you're a single person, this is the time you need to decide, yes, I'm going to save sex for marriage. And yes, I don't just want to save sex for marriage, like I want to live a pure life. Okay, I want to save the gift of my sexuality in all its forms for my future spouse. Because if you're gray on those topics, I probably will save sex for marriage. Yeah, I probably will save this for marriage. I probably will save that for marriage. When two people that have a gray understanding of purity boundaries get into a relationship and there are no clear boundaries that they're actually working on or working towards, what ends up happening is, even if it's an unconscious thing between the couple, they end up falling further and further away from purity than they ever would have thought, because they haven't actually developed concrete purity boundaries to work from. When we went on our first date with Madeline, I shared my purity boundaries. I was like, this is who I am and this is the level of purity I desire. And not only did she admire the purity boundaries that I had set, but she was very quick to share hers, and she wanted to know whether I was going to respect and honor those boundaries as well. By having firm purity boundaries set as a single person, you actually weed out people that just want to use you. Because when you meet people, you look, this is who I am, I'm saving sex for marriage, or I'm saving this and this for marriage. When people meet you and you're on a date or something and you say, look, this is who I am and this is what I want, people aren't going to hang around if they're only in it for the sexual pleasure they want from you. It's an awesome way to test someone's love, to test the purity of the intention of someone's love. It's a great time as well, like I said the other day, to list the certain qualities you'd like in a future spouse. Ask yourself as a single person, what kind of person would I desire to marry? Because when you're meeting all these people as a single person, okay, it frees you from not falling head over heels with every person that you meet. Or wondering, is this the one? Is this the one? Is this the one? It frees you from all that. Okay, and you know, look, Lord, this is the person I want. Just reveal who it is when the time is right. But I know the kind of person that I'm looking for. Secondly, we've got to restore friendship. Restore friendship. This is the restore weekend. We're going to restore friendship, right? Starting by same-sex friendships. What do I mean by this? Guys, you'll agree with me on this, right? In high school, we're all fighting to be the alpha male. So when we go to those year 10 parties and there's girls around, what do we all do? We try and put our mates down so we look like we're the best guy in the class, right? Guys tend to step on the other in an attempt to build themselves up, normally because we're insecure in our own identity, right? So we try and put the people down around us to exalt ourselves above the others to look impressive to the girls. Girls, it's a little bit different. Girls will tend to, if the girl sees that there's this one girl in class who's, she gets all the attention from the guys, she's so attractive, really athletic, really funny, really popular. Okay, well, I want to try and get her off that pedestal. I'll talk about her negatively behind her back. I want to kind of damage her name. I want to pull her off that high chair, right, that she's on. And so we're always competing with each other. We need to get to the point where we're really focused on trying to build up, okay, our friends of the same sex. It shows security in who we are and our identity. We were talking about this last night at the community house, right? Sarcasm is destructive to intimacy. I'm going to say that again. Sarcasm is destructive to intimacy. Okay, I went to an all-boys school. Okay, it was everywhere. It was, you know, it was like, because I love you so much, I'm going to look for every opportunity I can to pay you out, right? And, you know, if you've got a problem with that, you just don't understand, you know, how to be mates, you know. Seriously, this is not the ideal way to prepare for a relationship. If we train ourselves to believe that sarcasm and kind of like that put-down humor is meant to show that I love you, how, imagine taking that into a relationship where we put down the person that we love all the time. No. Authentic friendship is about building one another up. Authentic friendship is being able to look your friend in the eye, give them a compliment, and not laugh it off after. To be able to look someone in the eye and say, you know, Sam, you've been fantastic this week at setting stuff up for us. You know, your parents have been fantastic at organizing the food. You know, Jamil is just on fire for God. Without joking and laughing it off after, but being able to look someone in the eye and give you a sincere compliment that actually builds the other person up, because that is so important for a relationship. Okay, if I couldn't look Maddie in the eye and say to her honestly, I think you look lovely today, or thank you so much for, I noticed how patient you were with that person, or I was so inspired by how you served that person this morning. Or, you know, thank you for how selfless you are. These kind of comments, they breed intimacy, okay, between a couple. And it's very important to learn how to do that. And we've got to start that first in our same-sex friendships. So, what about opposite-sex friendships? Guys, I want to encourage you, look for every opportunity you can to show acts of service and kindness to every woman you come in contact with. For the ladies in the room, please, please show verbal appreciation for when a guy does come out of himself, get out of his comfort zone and serve you. Open the door for you. Look for different ways to honor you as a woman. These are really important. We need to build each other up. I've heard far too many guys tell me, I don't bother about, you know, opening doors and serving girls anymore, because most of the time they don't even thank me after. I was at a restaurant once and sitting next to the back door of this restaurant, and this mother with three kids running around her is coming out with a tray of food, and I got up to open the door for her. And she said, I can get my own door, thank you. Sit down, you know. Really pushed me off. There's another time a lady was coming down, okay, a huge set of stairs with a pram, okay, at a train station, and I said, would you like me to help you with that pram? And she goes, no, I'm waiting for you to get out of my way. But see, we can hear those and we can respond in different ways. I can say, okay, well, you know, don't worry about that then. I'm not going to serve anyone or offer to serve a woman if she's going to treat me like that. Or I can say, no, I'm not going to let a woman that doesn't understand her beauty and doesn't understand that she is worthy of being served and worthy of my honor to dictate the kind of man that I should be. Even if she doesn't understand her worth, I'm going to continue to serve and honor every woman I possibly can. But it does help so much when we verbally show appreciation for when we get out of ourselves and serve the other person. I think two of the main struggles that we experience in opposite sex friendships, one is flirting and the other is emotional virtue. What is flirting? Flirting is showing insincere romantic interest towards another person. It's insincere. We don't really, really mean what we're doing. We're just looking for that awesome kind of, yeah, I'm kind of clicking with this person. It's fun. You know, we tend to do it, especially with people that we may not see all the time, right? There's this one guy, a friend of mine. He's in his early 30s and he's still single. And you'll find out why in a second. He said, I love going to bars and just, you know, like I'll just kind of chat up the girl at the bar. I'll get her number off her, but then I'll throw it in the bin as I walk out of the pub. I just love knowing that I could get her number if I tried. She's probably a lovely woman behind the bar, right? And she's feeling like she's really made a connection with this guy. You know, he's making me laugh and, you know, he found me humorous and he was really, really nice, really sweet. And I gave him my number and he never, ever called me again. And I've never, ever seen him again. What does a woman think when that happens? What did I do wrong? Why didn't he ring me? Am I not good enough? Was I not pretty enough? You know, was I not funny enough? Or, you know, what was it about me that just didn't impress him enough? Flirting breeds insecurity, self-doubt, a lack of understanding of self-worth. It does not build up the other person. Flirting is extremely selfish. Because flirting is about, you know, I'm enjoying this connection I'm experiencing with this person, but I don't really mean it anyway. And if I didn't see her again, or I didn't see him again, it's fine. What about emotional virtue? There was this one girl, I opened the door for this girl to enter the youth center of my church once. And a few days later, word got around the young adults of the parish that Simon likes so-and-so. And I was like, when did I ever tell her I liked her? I can't remember, right? And then turns out it was because I'd opened the door for her, she was like, oh, well, you know, he was nice enough to open the door. He must like me. Now, this is important, right? For girls, if a guy opens the door for you, okay, you can't start planning what the wedding day is going to look like, right? You can't just jump all those steps and say, right, what's his surname? Do I like the surname? You know, what are we going to call the kids? And what's the wedding day going to look like? And all that stuff. Okay, that's being emotionally unvirtuous. So that's where our mind and our heart is running way too fast for reality. If a guy likes you, you should let him tell you that he actually likes you. Don't make up his mind for him, right? But what was the problem here? This poor girl that thought that I liked her, why did she think I must like her? Because all the other men that were involved in that youth group had failed to serve her. So if I was the only guy that had ever opened the door for her from amongst the youth at this particular parish, it's no wonder she felt, well, that's out of the ordinary. Maybe he's actually interested in me. But no, the other men had simply failed to honor her beauty and her worth as a young lady, and she deserves that. And I had to talk to her and say, look, sorry, I just was trying to do the right thing. But it was sad that she had not been treated with the adequate respect and honor that she deserved. So how do we build healthy opposite sex friendships? Firstly, we've got to increase the face-to-face contacts, decrease the social media behind a phone, behind a laptop screen contacts. Okay? We must begin to shift this. I'm sorry, but this kills me. This absolutely kills me. I've seen it when guys will just send a text to a girl. Hey, how are you? This conversation is purely over Facebook, purely over text messaging. We'll talk more about media in a second, but we really need to get to know one another face to face. We've got to actually have real conversations. Secondly, I think, and this was really helpful for me, while I was single, I had a bit of a policy where I wouldn't go out one-on-one with other girls for no reason. I wouldn't just catch up one-on-one with a girl for a coffee or for dinner, because I always believe that we should save those one-on-one catch-ups for someone that you actually are discerning a relationship with, because it begins to devalue a date. And you've probably heard this, right? How many people have you ever met that weren't sure whether they went on a date or not? I hear it all the time. I think it was a date. I mean, I think she thought it was a date. Or I'm pretty sure he asked me on a date, but he didn't actually say the word, but you know, he asked me out for coffee, right? We've got to kill the gray area and actually speak clear language so we know exactly where the other person stands or whether it was a date or not. So what I did was and all the girls in my youth group knew that Simon's not just going to ask you out for a coffee because he believes that he wants to save that for the girl he actually wants to date. And so if any girl actually wanted to ask me a serious question or something, okay, they'd have to give me a really good reason as to why they wanted to go out to discuss something one-on-one. But I remember girls would say to me, because I would still tell them at the beginning of every time we went out, this is not a date, and I would explain what I felt a date meant. And every single one of them, without fail, they would be like, okay, that's lovely. I know exactly what this is. This is just a time we're going to spend together to talk about something important, but it's not a date, and I know that you're not interested in me in this way. And there was this sigh of relief, okay, peace, no confusion. So, thirdly, what do you actually do when you like someone? Okay, so say you've been spending heaps of time face-to-face with someone of the opposite sex that you feel really drawn to, and you're really starting to feel, man, I want to date this person. I want to go out with this person. First thing to do, I don't mean to be like a killjoy here, but slam on the brakes for a second and ask yourself a very important question. You would be surprised how many people I've asked that have not been able to give me a good answer to this question. When you feel drawn to a particular person that you'd like to date, slam on the brakes and ask yourself a simple question. Why do I like them? What is it about this person I'm actually really drawn to? Is it simply their exterior beauty, or are there interior values that I am just so drawn to? Because if it's interior values we're drawn to, that's great. There's actually some substance to your attraction. Okay, I'm not saying that, you know, we should be drawn to the exterior. Even Pope John Paul II said that's beautiful, okay? He says that's like the raw material of love. Okay, we're drawn to the beauty of another person. But if it's only the surface, that's a major problem. But the surface, okay, the exterior should draw us to the interior. And we should be able to say, I find this person's exterior beautiful, but I'm really drawn to the interior values and virtues this person has. So many of us are tempted to say, right, I like this person, let's jump straight into dating. I would encourage you, when you're actually starting to feel this, to slow down again, okay, and just foster the friendship that little bit longer. Begin to pray about the friendship, slow it down, and enjoy it. There's no hurry to start dating. The longer the foundation of friendship you allow to develop, the much better chance and much healthier if you did jump into a dating relationship, that relationship would be. Because we do need time to get to know a person on a whole range of different levels. If you went out with the person that you're so attracted to for dinner twice a week, and you sat opposite a table to them having dinner, okay, with candles on and dim lights, and it's a romantic setting, you are going to give the best possible version of yourself you possibly can to this person. You're going to hide all the weaknesses from them and basically put your best foot forward the whole time. You're going to make sure, you know, there's no one around, it's just me and him. I'm going to make sure I paint the best picture possible. And they're going to do exactly the same thing. But if you just do that for a few weeks and it's like, okay, I'm ready to date, I'm ready to actually enter a relationship with you, you haven't seen how they react around their friends of the same sex. Okay, you haven't seen how they treat their siblings or their parents. You haven't seen them serve at their youth group. You haven't seen them at church or when they're out with their friends. So friendship, the time of fostering that period of friendship, should allow you to see them in many different environments, in real life environments. When I first met Madeline, we were constantly going to church events together. We were doing youth ministry together. But I saw her around her friends. I saw her around her family. She was around my family. So immediately, I got a really good... I was able to analyze her just as she is, because I was placing her and seeing her in real life scenarios and environments. So I think texting really, really interferes with this process of seeing the real person. Firstly, texting should never ever be a form of conversation. A text messaging conversation, it's not a tennis match. You shouldn't be having a game of back and forth, okay? I've seen people that just, they have never-ending conversations via text message. It's like a 24-hour conversation that only pauses when they're asleep. I met one young man in Melbourne. He said to me, "My girlfriend and I, we text 24/7. I said, "How often do you see her?" He said, about twice a week. He came to me after a talk to share that his relationship is boring and stale. That's how we described his relationship. He goes, "When I see her, we have nothing to talk about." And he later revealed that simply they just text constantly. So when they actually get to see each other face to face, it's like, this is really weird. I actually have to say something. And I encouraged him. I said, "Look, I'm just going to, you know, try this out. Just maybe send her a good morning text message. Send her something in the afternoon so that when you actually see her at the end of the day, you've actually got something to share." I said, "Just maybe start with this. Just start with, don't give away everything that happened during the day, so you can just share, how was your day?" And he was like, "Man, that is amazing." Like, he was just over the moon with this advice. I was like, "Well, it's pretty simple advice, but it's like, it does work. Trust me, right? Just ask each other how your day was. Don't give too much away, right?" So simple things like that. Like, texting can really kill just the beautiful flow of conversation in a relationship. Please don't meet someone at a party, add them on Facebook, and private message them for 6 months and never meet up and never say how you feel. Don't get someone's number and just text for months on end and then say to them, like this guy said to one girl that I knew, he was like, "So just hypothetically, would you want to date me?" And she was like, "No, not really. I don't really see you that way." "Oh, good, yeah, because I didn't really want to either." Right? Come on. Why did he ask that question? He was hoping for a yes, right? So he could say, "Oh, awesome, okay, let's date," right? I think texting or just private messaging all the time, hiding behind a screen, okay, it's a cowardly way to initiate a relationship with someone. Get off your phone and talk to them face to face. Please don't ever ask someone out over a text message. And please don't dump anyone or break up with someone over a text message. That's one of the most horrible things you could possibly do to someone. Texting is a really useful, handy tool that I use at Madeline all the time. But we used it, especially when we were friends and in the early stages of our friendship, to plan when we're going to see each other. Or to plan when she'd be free to make a phone call. I've met a lot of people that this one girl said to me, I text my boyfriend all the time, but if I call him, he never answers the phone. But he'll text me straight after he gets the missed call. There's a fear of actually having a normal dialogue, but it's okay just to text so I've got time to think about what I'm going to say. This is not normal. This is not a normal relationship at all. You don't probably need to hear this, okay? But I think we all know people that are struggling with this stuff, and it's good to be able to give these what seems like normal advice, but is very helpful for many people. Be very careful how much time, okay, so say you're not just texting and you are on the phone all the time, talking actually on the phone. Be very careful about those late night, very long, 2 to 3 hour phone calls where you're pouring out your heart to someone or where someone is pouring their heart out to you. A 15-year-old boy that I spoke to recently said, there's this girl, she does her homework, has dinner, and she rings me at about 7 o'clock at night, and she makes me promise I'm not going to hang up until she falls asleep, which is normally about 10 or 11 o'clock at night. She's emotionally using this guy, right, for starters. But this guy felt trapped. He was like, well, I want to be nice because she's got so many problems. She would be on the phone with him, pouring out all the struggles and the wounds and the hurts that have happened in her life, and he received all this from this girl every single night for a period of 2 or 3 weeks. And he told her after 3 weeks, he said, look, you've shared like so much with me, and I think at the end of the 3rd week, she said, I actually like you. You know, you're so understanding and you listen to me and you love me, and I'd love to be in a relationship with you. You know, do you feel the same? And he said, no, I'm sorry, I don't feel the same. What happens to this girl now? She's just poured out her heart to this guy in the hope of what? Will he love me as I am, right? She's so desperate for this affirmation in love from this guy. She's poured everything, all that she is, out through these phone calls. And he says, no, I don't feel the same. Total rejection of everything that she is. Now, she shouldn't have done that in the first place, right? She shouldn't have, you know, overshared everything to a guy she only met a few weeks ago. But also, this guy, out of respect for her, should have said, I'm sorry, I really do not deserve to know this. I've known you for 2 weeks. I don't deserve to know, okay, the ins and outs of your heart and all your wounds and all your struggles. Okay, and that's very important as well. We need to be able to call the other out. Okay, if we're in the early stages of a relationship, we have to have the courage to say, I really don't think I deserve to know that information yet. Some information you really should just save for your spouse. Some information you should wait till you're actually in a committed relationship with someone. We shouldn't feel pressured to pour out everything that we are and all the struggles and the weaknesses that we have before we've even entered into a committed relationship with someone. Because the reality is, that guy did not deserve to know any of that stuff. And he's walking away with very, very valuable information and precious information about a woman's identity that he really had no right to hear about. So, be careful about how much time you're spending on the phone. Even be careful how much time, I mean, I can say this because it's a pretty good group here, right? Other places would think I'm nuts for saying this is actually as advice. But be careful how much time you spend praying with someone of the opposite sex that you're just friends with. Mm-hmm. Intimate prayer, divulging all your hopes and dreams and the struggles of family, right? That creates an emotional connection, a spiritual connection with someone that maybe you're not ready to be developing that connection with. I'll give you an example. This girl asked me at my parish once, Simon, would you mind saying a 9-day novena with me that I would find a spouse? That's not a healthy person. Like, you should not be praying with another man that you're friends with about finding a spouse. And I was like, okay, something like that. I said, I'm sorry, I have to say no. That would just be imprudent of me to join you in praying for an intention like that I said, I had to be honest. I said, I don't want any emotional or spiritual attachment to occur because I don't want any of that to happen, right? Things like that, right? That gives you a bit of, that's a bit of an extreme example, but that's an idea, right? So we've got to initiate places to see the other person. If you're involved in your youth group at St. Mary's Cathedral, if there's someone that you'd like to get to know better, invite them to the group. If there's someone coming to the youth group that you want to get to know, join the youth group. Dr. Scott Hahn's wife, Kimberly Hahn, I love this example she gives. She was like, look, if you're at your parish and there's this girl in the choir with a beautiful voice that you'd love to get to know and you can't sing at all, join the choir anyway, right? She's like, just create a space to see the person you want to get to know. If she's in the choir, join the choir. If he's in the youth group, join the youth group, right? There's nothing wrong with initiating ways to see the person that you'd like to get to know better. On the flip side of that, be receptive if, for example, for the young ladies in the room, if a young man from this youth group or from the parish that you're very good friends with, okay, and you're feeling very drawn to him, if he invites you, you know, out to a talk, or if he invites you to a future restore weekend or something like that, right? Don't play games. Don't play hot and cold. Don't play hard to get. Be sincere and genuine, okay, and be receptive to his acts of initiation to see you. That's really important as well. There was one guy at my parish, he really liked this girl, and he'd see her, and some days she was so warm, like, hey, how you going? She'd give him a big hug, like, how you been? Like, I missed you so much, and they have a great, you know, let's go out for coffee. And other days, just totally cold, like as if they never knew each other. She would ignore him, talk to other guys, flirt with other guys around him. He was like, mate, I feel like I've been, like, she's just taken me for a spin, right? I can't work her out. We've got to be sincere all the time, okay? If we really do like someone, we should always be warm and receptive to anything they've initiated. Don't play games. And when you do go out in groups as much as you possibly can. Try not to be isolated. Don't allow a friendship to become an isolated, exclusive friendship. I've seen it happen, right? These youth groups, right, there's youth groups that are going on with 30 people, and there's two people that are in love with each other, and it's as if no one else is in the room, right? It's an exclusive, isolated friendship that's very unhealthy, and it even at some points it can be uncomfortable for the other people in the room, right? It's like it's important to have one-on-one conversation with the person that you're interested in a group setting. But it should never become isolated and exclusive to the point where the other people in the room don't even know if they're free to come and talk to you. All right? I hope that makes sense. I won't go into it too much. So this brings to the fourth point. What is the purpose of dating? Say you've been friends with someone now, okay, and you put the brakes on and you fostered the friendship even more, okay, all the signs are in the right place. But what does dating really mean? Dating is there to discern a spouse. A date is to discern a spouse. It is not to get to know someone. That's what friendship's for. Friendship is when you get to know someone. Dating is to discern a spouse. And I think this is one of the real problems in our culture today is that we've replaced authentic friendship. That's why I really do think this talk about dating is so much as well about restoring friendship. Because our relationship culture now has gone haywire because we've replaced authentic friendship with let's go on a date straight away. If there's any kind of emotional connection between us or chemistry, immediately let's go out for a coffee. Let's go for a date straight away. No. Foster the friendship. I hate this thing called the friend zone. We heard of the friend zone. Right, the friend zone. It's like, okay, I'm a guy and I've got all these girl friends that I know really, really well. I know them really, really well, but I would never date them because they're like my sisters. Have a laugh, have a joke with them, but I'd never date them. But then I go out to parties and meet other people, and if I get a 2 minute conversation with a girl and it's a bit of a spark, I'll date her instead. When I gave this talk at a parish once and I said that the purpose of dating is to discern a spouse, he laughed his head off at the back of the room, this guy. And he goes, mate, that is the most ridiculous definition I've ever heard. He goes, that would mean you'd like really have to know the person that you're dating. I was like, yeah, I'd agree with you. I don't think that's a problem either. I think that's a good idea, right? We should know the people we're dating. So really, I hate the term friend zone, okay? But really, the only people we should ever be discerning a relationship with are our friends. Because your spouse is ultimately your best friend. So why would you date someone that's not even your friend? I got given great advice by one of my mates at school's older sister. And she said, how can you possibly be more than friends with someone that you haven't even been friends with yet? And I love that. It's like, why am I going to discern marriage with a random girl I've met at a bar before I consider a girl that I've been friends with for 5 years from church at a youth group? That I actually know really well, and I know her virtues, and I know how lovely she is. To me, it just makes so much sense. When should we begin dating? This is a very, very simple question. When should you begin dating? When you've met someone that you honestly think God could be calling you to marriage with. Simple as that. Okay? That's why it's very, very hard to put an age bracket on when you should begin dating. Okay? But I would, just from personal experience and knowing how different I am now than what I was when I was in high school, I do think it is a very, very good idea, as a general rule, to spend at least your time in high school as a single person, discovering your identity, focusing on, Lord, who do you want me to be? I think that's a fair guideline, but there's no, you can't really put an age on it. Because I went on my first date when I was 22. I went on a date with the first woman I honestly thought I could marry, and that was Maddie. And I'd met tons of amazing girls. Like, I'm talking some fantastic, virtuous girls, very dedicated to ministry. I prayed a few novenas about different girls on my own, not with them, okay? On my own, I prayed a few novenas, and towards the end of every novena, something was not right. And I trusted that discernment in prayer. But I can honestly say that Madeline was the first young lady I ever really met that I fostered a friendship with and still felt, I really think God could be calling me to marriage with this girl. So it's very hard to put a time limit on it. One guy told me, he was like, I'm going to take 6 months off dating and then start again, you know? And I think this attitude of dating it just lacks so much meaning. It's like, I'm going to take a bit of time off and then just start dating again. And the first girl that looks impressive, or the first guy that looks impressive, I'll just ask him out for a coffee and see where it goes. I think any woman in this room, you don't just want to be, you know, one of a long list of girls some guys asked out for a coffee this year, do you? You'd like there to be some real thought and discernment and intentional, you know, it's an intentional decision. I'm asking this girl out for a date because there's something different about her. I remember I had one friend that would just date different girls every single week. And I asked him, I said, honestly, and I won't use their names, right? But I was like, what is the difference between X that you just went on a date with last night and Y that you dated in 6 months ago at the beginning of the year? His honest answer was nothing. He said, nothing. I just wanted to give them a chance to impress me. That was his honest words. And I thought, wow, what a horrible way to date someone. Can you imagine if I said about Madeline, there is actually nothing different about her than the girl that I liked when I was 18 years old? Like, I'm sure you wouldn't feel too honored about that, would you, Maddie? Right? So I also think many people will say, you know what, you need to develop experience in dating, right? You've got to develop experience, and the more you date, the better prepared you are for marriage. I disagree. Why? Because if I've been dating different girls all the time and I'm bonding and then I'm breaking up and then bonding and breaking up and bonding and breaking up, I'm actually preparing better for divorce than I am for marriage. I was a single guy until I was 22. I was practicing faithfulness as a single man. Why? Because any girl that I could have dated that I didn't really feel called to marry, I chose not to date. And that was an act of faithfulness to Madeline, who I hadn't even met yet. So I truly believe that being single for several years at a time before you actually date and court someone to marriage is better practice for marriage than dating multiple different people is. Because you're training yourself that love bonds and breaks, so I'm better prepared to divorce than I am for marriage. No missionary dating. Do not date someone with the hope of changing them or fixing them. It's actually dishonest. I've heard people say, you know what, there's this guy, you know, and he's a great guy, but I just need him to stop doing this, and I've got to get him to change that. And if he can, you know, get that out of his life, he'd be worth marrying. That's actually dishonest to that guy. You know why? Because when you love someone, it's meant to be a total gift of yourself completely to everything that person is. The good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So if this girl saying, I'll love him if he changes this, you're not actually loving him. Listen to this. You're not actually loving him. You're loving the idea of who you think you could make him become. And that's very unfair on him. We don't ever go into a dating relationship knowing, well, I'm dating him now, but I couldn't actually marry him unless this changed. There is nothing about Madeline right now that she does or has that I would say, well, I couldn't marry her because of that, but I'm hoping I've got 3 months left that she's going to get rid of that, right? No, that's not the right thing. So what do you actually do when you want to ask someone on a date? Firstly, I would say the man should lead what's called a DTR conversation, a define the relationship conversation. This has got to happen before the first date. Can you remember 50 minutes ago? What did we say? Right? Clear communication makes way for meaningful actions. So, a date is an action. So, I've got to clearly communicate my intentions before I actually make that action of saying, let's go on a date. So, just to use the real life example of myself and Madeline, before we went on our first date, I sat her down and said, look, Maddie, I'm, you know, super impressed with the person you are. I really admire your values and your qualities and your virtues. And, you know, through prayer and discernment, you know, through our friendship, and we've been very open about this anyway, but I said, I really am feeling that God is calling us possibly to marriage, and I would like to date you. Now, as I'm sharing this with Maddie, right, her jaw's kind of getting lower and lower to the floor, right? And I was like, oh boy, she's, you know, I was like, this is not looking good. Right? I'm thinking, she's probably thinking, how am I going to tell this nice bloke? He's a nice bloke, but I'm just not interested. And I kind of started to slur my speech a bit towards the end. And I was like, I just want to wrap this up so she can say no. And I was like, yep. And it's funny because her face just kind of fell in her hands. And I was like, okay, it's really bad. What is she going to say, right? And then she looked up and she said, Simon, my heart is completely open to you. I thought, wow, what a great answer, right? That was awesome. I was really panicking there for a while. But she said, my heart is completely open to you. And then from there, see what just happened, right? No confusion. There was peace. It was clear. Everything was clear. So when I actually asked her on a date, and we went on a date, guess what? In the back of her mind, she knew the whole time, this date is packed with meaning. And this guy brought me here because he thinks he'd like to marry me possibly. There was no shying away from the truth. Now, I think a guy should lead a DTR conversation simply because it honors the woman. That's the only reason. Because when a guy leads a DTR conversation, he's taking the burden of rejection off the woman in case she asked first, and he's laying it squarely on his shoulders. So he actually honors the woman and empowers her by giving her the decision whether to receive or to reject his initiation of love. Does that make sense? Right? It's got nothing to do with, you know, because, you know, I'm just the man and I'll tell you how I feel first. It actually honors the woman. Ladies, when you are sitting opposite a guy who's leading a DTR conversation with you, you've got a very important job. You must give him an enthusiastic yes and why. You've got to tell him why. Why is it? Because you also feel like you could be called to marriage with him? Because if it's not, is it only because you're just too embarrassed to say no? This is really important stuff, right? I've had way too many girls say to me, you know, I went on a date just because I just couldn't tell him no. I just felt, well, you know, he was nice enough to ask. I probably should, you know, just honor it back. No, no, no. If a guy has clearly told you it's because I'd like to discern marriage with you, you owe it to him to tell him the truth, and you've got to be truthful. So it's either a yes and a why, or it's a no and a why. And you've got to love him enough to tell him the truth. I knew one couple that this guy was asking out this girl repeatedly for 4 years. 4 years over and over and over again. But she would never, ever give him a reason why. So he was just so anxious and confused, so desperate for this girl. He wanted this girl so badly, but she would always lie when she gave him a reason why it was a no. She'd say, oh, I'm just want to finish uni first. And then it became, oh, look, I've just started a new job and I'm really busy at this job, so maybe just not now. Or it was like, oh, you know, I just, you know, something's going on with family or not feeling well. Honestly, the excuses changed every couple of weeks, right? That's dishonest as well. You've got to be honest enough to say, this is why. And if it's a, look, I just don't feel that way about you, then that's a good enough answer. And guys, if we hear that answer, we need to entrust her to God and leave her alone. So if it is a yes, I would say, guys, you've got to ask the young lady's father's permission to take her on a date. Okay, what is it when you're about to marry another woman? You are basically saying to the father, thank you for getting her to this point, but I will now take over as the new man in her life. And I will do your job in leading her to heaven. That's my promise to the father. So what better way to begin that relationship than by actually asking the father's permission to begin with, can I date your daughter? That was one thing that I went and asked Madeline's dad, okay, for permission to date her. And he was really touched by it. I remember him saying to me, like, you know, I'm sure there wouldn't be too many guys around today that would be doing this. And he said, thank you very much, but yep, no worries, right? He actually said that is what made him realize he felt that he could trust me to take her out, because he knew that I wasn't hiding behind anyone's back doing it. My intentions were clear and pure. So all this removes that kind of dating, right? Like the gray area. It takes all that out of the equation. Okay. Now, very, very quickly, girls, if you're friends with this guy and it's going for months and months and months and he's not leading a DTR conversation with you, this is what I would propose you do. Instead of actually, you know, asking or leading the DTR with him, I would say something like this. I would demand that he tells you what his intentions are. There was this one girl from church. She came up to me one day after youth group and she was like, Simon, I've got to talk to you. We sat on the rock, you know, started talking. And she said, look, this guy, he always asks me to go for a car ride with him. And halfway through the car ride, he kind of grabs my hand and puts his hand on my leg. And he just hugs me for a little bit too long. And he says, you know, really intimate things. And I'm like, he hasn't said anything, but like he's treating me like I'm his girlfriend. And I said, okay. I said, well, can I put my hand on your leg and give you a big long hug and hold your hand right now? And she was like, no. And I was like, well, I haven't said anything like more or less to you than this guy has. So why are you letting him do it to you? She goes, well, I'm just friends with you. But like, I said, okay, you're just friends with me. But has this guy said any more to you than what I have? She goes, no. I said, then you're just friends with him. So you're letting another friend do to you what you wouldn't let me do to you. I said, we have a problem. I said, next time you get in the car, I want you to say, I'm sorry, but I don't let my friends hold my hand. Can you please explain what your intentions are? She was like, oh my God, great idea. She took off, right? I think she was really eager for that next car trip, right? And it was beautiful because she came up to me a week later and she was like, Simon, you wouldn't believe it. Did everything, right? You know, got in the car and she's like, okay, I'm sorry. He did hold my hand for a little bit, but I, you know, pulled my hand away and I said, you know, I won't say his name, but I don't let my friends hold my hand. So you better tell me what your intentions are. Yeah, he was stunned, you know, and he apologized. He goes, look, I'm really sorry. He said, I'm really sorry. I haven't communicated how I'm feeling. I am sorry, that was disrespectful. I just got burnt in a past relationship and I've been really scared to initiate this conversation. He said, but thank you for pushing me to do it. Yes, I really do like you. I really admire you. And they started dating basically after that night. They're engaged still to this day, which is awesome, right? She didn't pour her heart out to him. She still worded it in a way that allowed her to receive or reject the offer, but she encouraged him to actually put the words together. So, the date. The guy should pick the girl up from her house. Why do I say that? Firstly, because I think he should be old enough to have a license. Secondly, girls, if you don't trust a guy with your home address, you should not date him. I think it's a really beautiful way to look at it. If you can't trust a guy with your home address, you should not be going on a date with him. If you can't introduce him to your parents, or really, ideally, I think it would be great if he's already met them, okay? But if you can't introduce, or if the guy taking you on a date doesn't want to meet your parents, okay, that should be sending alarm bells as well. But I think picking you up from your house is a great way to do it. Okay, it really tests the purity of his intentions. And the date should be a fun day or a fun evening. I would say it should have a faith element to it. Okay, we went to adoration, did some prayers, said a rosary, but we had a great discussion as well. And we brought God into our date, okay, but we also had a really good conversation. The theme of our discussion really was, you know, if we were going to get married, you know, how would this look and how would that look? What's your thoughts on this and that? And because now we were on a date to discern marriage, that enabled me to want to ask the more personal, more serious questions. But prior to that, I really had no right to ask that stuff. This is the perfect time to share your purity boundaries. It is the perfect time to share your faith. I remember one guy, a friend of mine, said to me, I've been on 3 dates with this girl. Things are going really, really well, but I haven't told her that I'm Catholic yet. And I was like, why not? And he goes, oh, just in case it's a turnoff. I was like, mate. The fact that you love Jesus is your biggest draw card. I was like, the fact that you're a faithful Catholic man is the best part of who you are. I said, if she doesn't like that, that's probably a problem. He was like, yeah, good point. All right. I should go and tell her I'm really into my faith. So share your purity boundaries and share your faith on this date. Dating should be a very, very short time. You shouldn't be dating for 6 months or dating for 12 months. A date really should be a short period of time where you go on a few dates, one-on-one, you're talking about serious stuff, only to discern entering a committed courtship. And courtship is different than dating. Dating is, I'm discerning entering a relationship with this person. Courtship is when you say, right, I'm your boyfriend, you are my girlfriend, everyone in our family knows about it, we're not hiding anything under the table, this is it. There's a real level of openness and freedom about it. Purity in dating, super important. Purity in dating, really, there should be complete abstinence in dating. Why? Because it will cloud your judgment. If on your first date, you're holding hands and kissing and all affectionate, okay, you're very quickly going to come drawn to the pleasure you're receiving from that person more than being able to actually discern, do I like this person and can I marry this person? Affection is a bit different in a courtship. Because you've actually made a commitment to each other, it would be healthy and encouraged to hold hands, simple kisses, hugs, right? Healthy affection. That's great. And as I said in one of the talks this weekend, intimate touching, passionate kissing. They prepare the body for the sexual act.
Can you clarify simple kissing, like kissing your mum and, you know, your siblings, or kissing their head, kissing?
Sorry, so a simple kiss really would be like kissing on the cheek or closed mouth kissing on the lips. That's the best way to explain it. Passionate kissing, right? Won't explain that too much, right? And intimate touching, that stuff really should be reserved for marriage because it prepares the body for the sexual act. And finally, sorry to go a little bit long, the ultimate test of clarity is this. I should be able to ask any of you right now this simple question. In your life at the moment, you are either friends, you're dating someone, you're courting someone, you're engaged to someone, or you are married to someone. Anything else in between is a sign of confusion and potential problems. I should be able to ask any of you that question, and you should be able to say, right, I'm just friends at the moment, I'm not dating anyone. Or yeah, I'm actually dating someone right now, or I'm courting someone, whatever. There should be no confusion. If there's someone that you're talking to at the moment, someone you're texting a lot or you're hanging out with a lot, if I was to pull both of you aside without you knowing what the other person says, if I asked the person you're talking to that question and then I asked you that question, you should both give exactly the same answer and there shouldn't be a second of hesitation. That is the ultimate test of clarity. And I will just finish with this. It's never too late for a DTR. I don't care how long into a friendship you are with someone. I don't care how long into a dating relationship you might be with someone. If you're unsure about the intentions of your relationship right now, get on the phone today or send a text message, right, to arrange a time to catch up with that person and have a DTR. Try and clarify exactly where your relationship stands. So that brings us to the close. I want to thank you all very, very much for being so patient in that final session, the longest talk, I think. I really do want to thank you all very, very much. Very quickly, just a few resources to promote on dating. This is a great one by Jason Evatt, How to Save Your Marriage Before Meeting Your Spouse. If you've already met your spouse, don't worry, you can still listen to it. If you think you've met your spouse already, How to Date Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul, 5 Do's and 5 Don'ts of Dating. Okay, that's an awesome CD by Jason Evatt as well. We really appreciate it coming down to Tassie, okay? A lot of what I said today has come from this book by Sarah Swofford called Emotional Virtue. This is the best book on dating I have ever read. Absolutely amazing. That is a fantastic book. And this one here, How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul, 21 Secrets for Women. But I'd advise the guys to read it too because I read it and it was very, very helpful hearing the reverse effect of what a woman's looking for. Guys, secret for you. If you know what a girl's looking for, you know who to become, right? It's awesome. I think that brings us to the close of the weekend. Thank you, everyone, very, very much for your support. You were amazing and we had a great time.
That was Simon Carrington with Are We Dating Yet? From the Restore Weekend in Hobart, Tasmania. For more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.